and welcome to Rewatchable episode number 273 for Sense 8 episode, season 1, episode 3. Smart Money is on the Skinny Bitch. I'm Danielle and I will be your host today. And I'm so excited to be here to talk to you about this episode because after doing the very first episode of Sense 8, this was a breath of fresh air for me. So here today with me, I am joined by some pretty amazing hosts. We have our super fan, Mai, and newbies, Caitlin and Brittany. Hi, everybody.
Hello.
Hi.
Hello.
Hello. If you would like to get in contact with any one of us, you can do so through all of our official Rewatchable channels. You can email us at rewatchable.podcast@gmail.com. You can tweet at us at re_watchable. Or you can get in contact with us through our Tumblr, which I think Mai still handles, and that's rewatchablepodcast.tumblr.com. So, everybody, I'm so happy to be here. I'm so happy that you are here. Let's start things off by doing some fun facts so that people can get used to the sounds of our voices, or at least the voices that they will be hearing over the next hour, hour and a half or so. Mai, did you want to go first today?
Sure, I can... talk about the very, very lovely message I got on my birthday from the Rewatchable Twitter.
Aww.
Yay.
Was that lovely pun intended?
It wasn't, but...
It accidentally happens, I guess.
Because I didn't know if it was you or not.
Oh, it's always.
You should have seen, it's Brittany.
You should have seen the stress of picking a Capitals gift. I'm like, I don't know if she likes this player. I don't know who this player is. I don't know what player to look for.
Like, I got so emotional because of the Capitals gift. It made me so happy. So yeah, now I'm 30 and old.
Not old.
You're younger than me.
Not old. Neither of you are old.
In my mind, everybody stays the same age. I just keep getting older.
I understand that. Whenever anybody asks me how old my brother is, I immediately want to say 4.
Yeah.
He's 22. So, I get it. All right. Caitlin, what's your fun fact for the week?
Okay, my fun fact is actually a recommendation. I have discovered this podcast... And it's not a competitor, so I feel okay recommending it for falling asleep at night because I need to fall asleep faster. It's called Nothing Much Happens, Bedtime Stories for Grownups. And it's this podcast where the host writes an original story, but it's what it sounds like, nothing much happens. It's like... My favorite one is like a day on the lake with friends. And it's just like you spend the day like on the water and then you eat sandwiches and then you go inside and make a dinner and everyone talks and it's lovely. Like literally nothing happens. It's just she reads the story and then reads it a second time a little more slowly. And the idea is to kind of just settle your brain listening to this calming story where there's not really any action to help you fall asleep. And I find it very enjoyable. So Nothing Much Happens, Bedtime Stories for Grownups is my recommendation for my fun fact.
That's awesome. I like that she tells it twice. I'm assuming the second time is like you're not listening to what happens because you already know what happens.
And she does it more slowly the second time just so you can more drift as you go. Mm. And then if you are still awake after the second time, she encourages you to like think back on it until you fall asleep. And I find that helpful because I like falling asleep to listening to audiobooks or something. But this is... Mm. There's no action to it at all. So you're not trying to actively engage with a story because it's just calming. Like sometimes they're like about making a good dinner or something. So that's why I like it.
I will have to try that. I have not been sleeping well lately. So that sounds great. Brittany, what is your fun fact for the week?
My fun fact is Comic-Con themed because Comic-Con's happening right now. And in real time. And after the Star Trek Discovery panel, they had the cast read tweets from people reacting to the panel. And Sequina Martin Green read my tweet and said that she loved it. And it was a lot for me to wake up to and handle the next morning. So that was exciting. And it's recorded for the whole world to see.
I saw that.
It was a lot for me to wake up to, especially because I love Captain Michael Burnham. Oh my gosh. It was so much.
And now you get to listen to it forever.
I know. And our colleagues on the podcast are doing such a bang up job at Comic-Con. And I'm so proud of all of them.
Mm-hmm. They're awesome.
Yeah, this is our annual Comic-Con reject show.
Everyone who's not at Comic-Con is on this podcast.
Basically.
Yep.
Oh, well, it's fine. I guess it's my turn. So my fun fact is that last weekend, I went on a long weekend trip to Nashville with some friends that I met on a trip a couple years ago. And the number one thing on one of my friends' bucket list for Nashville was to get into the Bluebird Cafe, which I am not a Nashville TV show watcher, but apparently like it's a huge thing. And it made the Bluebird Cafe even more popular than it already was. So we waited outside in line for standby tickets for this cafe for 4 hours. And we did get in. We were the first ones in line. We did get in. And we saw, she apparently was a contestant on the Glee Project season 2. Her name was Harper Gray. We saw her play the Bluebird Cafe, and she was pretty awesome. And so while it was 4 hours of waiting and kind of miserable waiting, it was worth it. And so I get to say that I went to the Bluebird Cafe. It was pretty cool. I don't know if I would wait another 4 hours to ever do it again. But
when I went to Nashville, we were like, yeah, no. We are not doing that. So instead, we took another Nashville fan favorite and decided to ask every single Uber and Lyft driver when we were there if they had seen Connie Britton. And the closest we came to finding someone who actually saw Connie Britton was a nice young gentleman who once saw her in line at Whole Foods. So we asked him where that Whole Foods was, only to find out that that weekend Connie Britton was in Washington, D.C. for the White House Correspondents' Dinner. So whatever. What can you do?
Oh, that's so sad.
So her and her fabulous hair were not even in the Nashville area.
She does have great hair.
Oh, the best hair.
Hmm.
I really need to start watching that. We went on a tour of the Grand Ole Opry, and they have like a small, they have their own like TV studio or whatever in there. And they had like a little exhibit with all of like Nashville stuff, like clothing and all that. I was like, okay, well, I'm going to start watching this so I can understand what all the hype is about. So one day I will start watching that. But that day is not today, because today I am all about Sense8. And I am really excited to talk about these episodes and hear how your guys' opinions have changed. I didn't get a chance to listen to last week's rewatchable. This week has been incredibly crazy for me. But I will go back and listen to it. So for now, just know that I know nothing about what you talked about last week, and I apologize. But I'm excited to hear what you have to say this week as we talk about Smart Money is on the Skinny Bitch. And so our synopsis for this episode, as written by, I think it's Adriana, is what I can gather a little bit from the tone. And basically, her synopsis is, in this episode, the Sense8s connect together until they literally fight off the bad guys. And that is the show synopsis for this week. So let's jump into discussion. And I'm assuming the best way that we're going to be doing this is just by character. So let's start with Will. At the end of the last episode, Will saw Whispers, and he was in that shop, and like they had this weird car chase, and so now Will is kind of waking up with the ramifications of what happened to him. And he kind of goes through a little bit of mental gymnastics, if you will. Nothing really happens to him, but he does get a flashback of Sarah. And one of the first things that she says to him is, don't look at Whisper's eyes. How did you guys feel about this weird ongoing dream / premonition sort of thing involving this little girl and her warning as to not look at Whisper's eyes?
Who is Whispers? I'm confused.
Oh, that would be a good thing to define. Okay, so, have we seen him yet? Yes, we have. Yes, we have. Okay.
But I didn't know he had a name.
Yes. So Whispers is that middle-aged to older gentleman. He has white hair and glasses. He was the one who showed up immediately after Angelica's suicide in the
first episode. He's the creepy dude.
Yes, he is the super creepy dude. He is also the dude. Do you have anything else to add?
We shouldn't.
Okay. I wasn't sure. I'm having terrible flashbacks of watching this before. I've watched this so many times that it's sometimes hard to separate what's going on. So yes, he is the super creepy dude from that beginning episode who was kind of coming after Angelica. And Will has not really come across him before, and yet Sarah's warning him not to look at this guy's eyes. I will say that when I first watched the series, and even the second time I watched the series, I thought all the stuff with Sarah was really strange, and felt really different from a lot of what else was going on. And actually, the second time I watched the show, I completely forgot about the Sarah stuff happening. And so at some point in this episode, we get a scene of basically someone operating on Sarah's brain or on her head. And I was wondering what you guys thought about that. Did it feel, I guess, out of context, or did it feel like really strange? Do you have any idea what might be going on?
I assume it's tied into the fact that this other doctor wants to lobotomize Nomi. There's all this brain stuff going on. That's the connection I'm going to draw.
Cool. Yeah, I also wasn't too aware that it was Sarah until we opened the case file much later in the episode. So watching the scene right off the bat, because, like, you know, you hear they're talking about Sarah Petrell, but Sarah Petrell could have been, I don't know, 16 for all I knew at the when they were talking about her before. So it was, I wasn't sure if it was young Will and another young, like, if it was Riley or whatever, but I, obviously it wasn't, because, you know, Riley wasn't captured, I guess, and her brain seems to be still in her head. So, I thought it was an interesting, like, combination of things, like Caitlin was saying, because, you know, you have that connection. They're obviously connected to each other, so whether or not he was feeling the fear of Nomi mixed with the fact that he was just in a car accident, mixed with the fact that he's so preoccupied with this Sarah Petrell case, like, is it actually a connection caused by being whatever these people are called, because we haven't kind of identified that name yet? Or was it just because, you know, he was in a car crash and just having a super messed up dream? So it's getting kind of hard to decipher whether or not things are dreams or things are connections. And not that that's a bad thing, but definitely something to keep in mind as we keep getting semi either flashbacks or dreams or this, whatever they're doing with one another, their connection.
I think that's interesting that, like, he was in this car accident, and it's making it harder for us as viewers to kind of figure out what's real, what's in his brain, and what's not real. Because I feel like those are the three sort of distinctions that are happening. I will say all will be revealed, albeit probably not right away or in a completely, like, logical sense, but it will all be revealed. But let's keep talking about those connections, because we see more characters being connected in this episode. For instance, at the end, towards the end, we see Will going to the shooting range, and it's kind of perfect timing that he's going there because Cafius kind of needs help, and Will and Cafius kind of connect at that moment. How did you feel about that connection between the two of them?
I mostly find myself thinking, what the heck do the other people around these people see? Like, we're seeing them, like, interposing the characters in each other's worlds. But I'm like, Are the other people around them, like, seeing the person doing this crazy shit? Or that was mostly my thought.
Big yeah. Hashtag no comment.
I feel like, well, the old woman on the bus clearly saw Van Damme, so she's tripping. But I think everyone else around them, judging solely by their reactions, at first I thought maybe they were seeing Sun, especially like when the guys who were physically fighting Cafius, like their reactions to him, you know, fighting against them. I thought that maybe they were seeing Sun, but then at the same time, you know, you have the driver of the truck who was just like not showing any reaction to like, what is going on? Like, yeah. If I feel like if people were popping in and out, they would have all ran much earlier. So I think that possibly they're not seeing another physical being come into play, especially if like you're in the middle of Nairobi and there's like a white dude showing up in a, and then like this cute little Asian girl who's going to kick the crap out of you. I think that their reactions would have been more crazy, but I do think like, for example, when Will is in the last episode looking in the mirror when he's shaving, I think that he and Riley do see each other, if that makes sense. Like, I feel like maybe only they could possibly see each other. But I don't know it. There's not enough evidence on the page for me to point to an answer yet.
Yet being the operative word, I promise. I'm going to jump around a little bit because we're already talking about Cafius. I want to go to Cafius and talk about kind of what's going on with him. So we get more of his day-to-day life in Nairobi and his relationship with Jella, and his job basically is to ferry people from like the outskirts into the city with the Van Damme, which is, I still love that bus so,
same.
So much. It's so great. But the first thing I kind of wanted to talk about was Cafius's relationship with his best friend and kind of some of the things that they talk about. To me, Cafius and Jella are very much, maybe not foils, but they're two different sorts of personalities, and they're really great to watch. And you can kind of see that his best friend is kind of always there for him through anything. How are you guys feeling about their relationship so far, or just like him as a supporting character?
I like him.
Yeah. I like him fine. I think it's good to have him around, especially when, you know, Cafius needs a little bit of not guidance per se, but just like another kind of voice of reason, I think, at times, like, especially even though if he chooses to listen to it or not, that's one thing, but you know, just someone to bounce ideas off of and get out of his own head for a while. Because I think if he was left to his own devices, you know, it would be being miserable about work, going home to a sick mother, and sort of being in this hopeless type of cycle. However, he has this friend who's willing to, you know, go with him to get the AIDS medication that his mother needs, and, you know, take care of the stuff that he is not good at, like talking to Mr. Fuckoff and getting, you know, like coming up with that plan to be like, no, you told me that it was this address. And, you know, whereas Cafius probably would have been like, oh no, that's okay, thank you, bye. And like, or would have gotten his money taken without getting anything in return. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, I like him as a counterpart to Cafius, because I think that they balance each other out. And like I said, whether or not they're going to, you know, listen to one another, that's one thing, but at least they're there and they're not, that's it. They're there.
I feel like the impression I get is that Cafius is kind of innocent and almost naive, like with mm-hmm. the whole I want to be a zebra thing going on, which was adorable.
Yeah.
But with that whole scene where they're going to get the medication, it very much feels like Jella is more street smart, a little sharper with the edges to kind of look out for Caphias, and maybe he's trying to protect Caphias's innocence a little more, which is an interesting dynamic.
I definitely think that's valid. I think that he, out of everyone, and I was talking to my roommate about this actually when we were watching, he seems like he's, like you said, very much naive and very much innocent and very different from the rest of the Sense8s in that way. They all kind of seem more adult perhaps than he does. But it's his heart that he makes him so hard to ignore. And I remember Caitlin, in the very first episode we recorded, you kind of noted how Caphias and his relationship with his mom was one of your favorite parts. I was just wondering how you thought about him, going to that drug dealer just to get medicine for his mom. Cause obviously it's not something that he has really access to.
And it made me sad, but also shows how much he loves his mother, that he's willing to do whatever it takes to help her. And he gets so angry when Mr. Fuckoff tells him that he should let her die because it's cheaper.
Mm-hmm.
So I think it just shows how important she is to him, that he's willing to go to those lengths for her. And it just makes me like him more.
He's a good boy.
He's a very good boy.
Yeah.
And he doesn't even go, he goes to the lengths with that drug dealer, but he also goes to the lengths with the superpower gang who we meet in this episode. He risks everything to go after them after they kind of rob him and all of his passengers and pistol whip him, basically. Mai, how did you feel about this, watching it again, kind of knowing where Caphias goes and just reintroducing yourself to him?
Basically just sitting there going, oh, don't. He deserves so much better.
He does.
That doesn't sound good.
Oh. In this moment, he deserves.
In this moment, this scene, knowing that if he hadn't stopped in that neighborhood.
Yeah, hadn't stopped for that woman on the corner.
Yeah. Keep going, but also, he wouldn't. He would have stopped. Of course he would stop.
Because of his heart.
Yeah.
And also, I think us saying, keep going, is interesting because I found myself thinking that at the same time. But I also found myself reacting differently in a lot of the situations that Caphias was in, because I know nothing about what it's like to live in Nairobi and any other country in Africa.
I just don't want to watch him get his face beat up, you know?
Because it's a cute face.
Well, that too, but because he's so sweet.
Yeah.
He's like the little dreamer of the bunch.
I think that's fair. I definitely think that's fair. And again, that kind of, watching this the first time, like I said, I had no real knowledge about what day-to-day life is like in Nairobi. I mean, obviously I don't know how true this is, but considering a lot of the other characters' lives are kind of painted very realistically, I would think that this would be too. And so I'm kind of curious how, because we get a lot of Caphias in this episode, and how his day-to-day life that we see here kind of changes or even supports any notions of what you thought life in Africa would be. Unless I'm the only one who was kind of thinking about this as we were going along.
Well, I think it's a very, despite the location, I still think it's a very universal story, though. It's about realizing that sometimes you have to just to make ends meet and to get the money for something that is so desperately essential to your life, you're going to do what you have to do, whether that is in Africa or it's in New Jersey, USA, working four shifts a day in different places in order to pay your rent and make sure that your kid can afford medication or something. It's the same story. It's in a different setting. But I think here you see, you know, the explicit risks of, okay, there are these areas that are worse than others. And is it worth that risk to go down there in order to pick up a few extra dollars? And in Cappius's mind, it is worth it, but there's a ton of gang violence. And that's how one sector of that area is surviving, is by picking on the sector that has nothing to give, but still taking that away. So I think it felt very real. Whether or not it was completely accurate, I will likely never know unless I talk to someone who has been there or lives there. But I think the overarching story that was told there felt very real because it's relatable in a different context.
It has that universal thing, that universal sort of appeal to your emotions and to your experiences. I completely agree. And I think the show does a really great job at that, in doing exactly what you just said, kind of showing you a slice of life in a different part of the world that you might not be familiar with, but you're able to pick out these things that you can definitely relate to or that you had similar experiences. But in Cappius kind of running after the gang, it's kind of, I mean, knowing what happened, even I was worried about him because he is such like a sweet little cinnamon roll, as we call people like Cappius. And what would he do if he didn't have this sort of connection? He probably wouldn't have made it out there, or out of there. But that's scary. But
would he have gone after them if he hadn't had the connection?
That's what I was. That was my assumption, was like the connection to Sun, who was like getting in the ring to fight, somehow pushed him to go in the first place.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, I don't think it was an independent decision, because like we were just talking about with having Jala, that would be a Jala decision. And he's the one saying, no, don't go. And I think that there had to be something greater at work to get Cappius to get up, put himself back together, get ready. And we saw, you know, he got up, got dressed again, got back in the van. And, you know, that's directly played against Sun getting her hands taped up and saying, you know, hearing from her trainer, oh, it's, I knew you'd be back. And Cappius is also getting into a ring of sorts.
And then he just like kicks the crap out of everyone in that ring. Which is really interesting to watch. I really love the way that they shoot these things, because you can see both the characters in that same place kind of doing the same moves. And like Cappius is fighting off multiple people at once, whereas Sun is fighting off just one person in the ring. So I kind of felt bad for the person in the ring, because she's going like four times harder on him, because they're going however hard on the people in Nairobi.
Well, but is she... Like, I don't know. This is more of a question that you probably can't answer. But is she going harder because she can see the other things that she's fighting? Or is Cappius just taking on her skills? Like, is Sun aware that this is happening? I know that she sees Cappius, like, lying on the... Like, we see Cappius lying on the ring and... But I'm not aware that she is seeing the fight that she's in, or if Cappius is just like drawing on her energy or skill set. Because like Will, for example, like, you know, I don't think that when Cappius is like shooting, he's seeing like, you know, the dummy that Will is shooting at. He's sort of just like tapping into some other thing that Will just happens to be doing at that time, and whether that's even happening at the same time, because I don't know what the time difference is between Nairobi and Chicago, but I'm assuming one of them would be asleep at this a different time. Whether it's a skill set or they're actually, they have to be doing the thing that they're doing in that moment. Because like, I don't think that it's the same, it would be the same time in Chicago, Nairobi, and Tokyo, even though like Tokyo could be like 3 in the morning. I don't know when underground fights happen, but you know, I'm not sure. I don't know. I think about this a lot because we talked about it a lot last week, looking for context clues. And I find myself picking apart the so-called quote unquote science of what is happening.
Don't question the science.
But I feel like you have to in this show. This is the show where you do and question the science.
Yes. Fun fact, Nairobi is 1 hour ahead of me. So that would be 8 hours ahead of Chicago.
Ah, okay. Okay.
And then Seoul, I think, is probably another, what, 8? Would you say that this fight with the three of them connecting now made it more confusing or gave you more to think about in terms of how that connection works?
Well, I think that's those two choices are one and the same. So, yes, it's confusing because I'm thinking about it more. Okay. Is my answer to your question.
Yep. Okay. I'm spending more time questioning the science.
Yeah, okay. Which I don't think is a bad thing. I'm actually probably enjoying the show more because I have all these questions and I'm thinking about it in a different way. It's also making the show more frustrating because I have to stop and never get answers until I talk about it for 2 hours, which is fine. But yeah, it is, I think, a combination. I'm more confused because I'm thinking about it more.
Well, I don't think we should reveal the science because I if I remember correctly, the show really leans into it and it's gonna pretty much sort itself out.
Oh yeah. No, I most of my questions when posed on this podcast are definitely not gonna be answered. I have many years of training of not getting answers, so I'm okay just throwing out questions and not getting anything back because I'm used to it.
Yeah. Unlike other shows, you get answers this time.
Oh, good. I'm happy. I'm going to get answers.
There will be answers. I will say that the next episode, I think, clarifies perhaps a little bit, kind of what's going on.
Yeah.
But I don't want to say anything other than that.
No comment.
Because I want to talk about it a lot next week. So while we're still talking about Sun, let's kind of move into her storyline really quickly. We don't see a lot of her. We do see more of her than we did in the previous episode. But we see her kind of stressing out about company financial paperwork. And she's ignoring calls from this guy who then ends up like threatening to sue her and all of these other things. And we see a kind of a lot of stressful things going on with Sun, although there isn't a lot of dialogue going on. How do you feel about kind of what's going on with Sun's storyline right now? Like, you see her in the office and then you see her being more of herself or more of her character in that ring at the end, but there's not a lot of explanation kind of going on with her.
I feel like I have some of the least sense of who she is of all the characters so far.
Mm-hmm.
So I have no emotional connection to her because she just, for me, just feels there right now. I don't really care, honestly.
Really?
I don't have a good sense of her yet.
Did that flashback with her mother telling her to like take care of her brother endear her to you at all? Or was it just kind of like, okay, but I need more?
I thought her mother was telling her to steal something, so I clearly was watching that too late at night.
Interesting. Okay.
So no, it did not help.
Fair enough.
I think Sun, I mean, besides like the badass underground fighter side of her, which was like so cool, but the actual business stuff, I feel like she is carrying the weight of her mother's final request. I did not get the fact that she was asking her to steal something, but I do get the sense that she's covering up something in order to protect her brother. And I think in the first episode where we see her being talked over and not able to say things and her brother being the big shot leaves her kind of in the trenches to cover up and take care of things. I think when her and Will were looking through files and, you know, just sort of having that connection of stressing over something that they can't bring to someone else, especially the sense that they can't bring it to a father figure because Will's dad doesn't want to hear about Sarah Petrel, and Son literally just can't see her father to bring this file to his attention. I think that, you know, she's trying to sort something out, and she's realizing that she can't do it alone, and she wants to bring it to him. It was a lot of numbers. I tried to like look at what she was looking at, so I'm assuming it's something with an account. And especially since the caller, Mr. Jung, I think it was, is going to like contact the authorities, something is clearly gone wrong and has not been addressed. And whether that's due to the fact that Sun tried to figure it out and couldn't, or something else is going on, or it was her brother's mistake and she is, you know, trying to follow her mother's wishes and protect him, I guess we'll find out. But I was really into the scene where she like slams her fist on the desk and breaks it. I thought that that was great. And again, just her connection with Will is so deep in that moment, not just because they're both looking at files at the same time, but because of the circumstances surrounding it. And I kind of think that that goes back to what we were talking about with Cafius, where we may not live in Nairobi and we may not live in Tokyo, but where is she in Tokyo? I can't remember.
Seoul.
She's in Seoul. But there's that universal story going on. Like, they're both dealing with crises. They both need their father's help. Both fathers won't give it to them. But it's two very completely different things. And they just happen to be happening at the same time. So I'm into Sun and everything about her, especially the fighting stuff. I'll watch 10,000 hours of her kicking the crap out of some guy.
Was her turn, or like her walking into that sort of underground fight, unexpected? Like, did that catch you by surprise at all? I think we see her doing sort of like yoga or like meditative things beforehand. But what was your reaction to seeing her actually in an underground fight?
Well, the Netflix image for the episode was her with a hood on. So that was fun. But otherwise, yes, it was actually kind of surprising. Because again, with the show, you don't know if that still is her being in someone else's place or her actually doing something on her own. But I think it paired nicely with the fact that, like you were saying, we saw her doing like those exercises in the beginning. It wasn't so much this, it was a lot calmer, but I loved it. I thought it was great.
I was a little bit the opposite. Okay. I just sort of felt like, oh, of course the Asian chick is the one who's into martial arts. It just, I don't know, it didn't feel, I was just sort of like an oh, of course thing with her going into the ring. It didn't feel surprising in any way.
This is why Caitlin and I need to always be on the same podcast. We never agree on anything.
Yep.
We don't have any ship wars yet, so that's good.
That's true.
Okay. Well, I'm sure that'll happen at some point. No comment. But yeah, no, that's interesting. I mean, I totally get your reaction. I think I might have had something similar. While I was surprised to see someone who was very much like a relatively quiet business person go into an underground ring, I will say it did feel kind of like an oh, of course. Like,
I mean, with all the Whedon we've been watching, where he has like the skinny, quiet girl is like terrifying. Like, it just feels like more in that vein. Like, it's just like, of course, it's the quiet, unassuming chick who has all these crazy martial arts abilities, because that just seems like what we see all the time anymore.
Yeah. I understand. Mai, did you have any thoughts on that?
I thought she was badass, so I, yeah.
Full stop.
Yeah, I just love watching Sun fight and leaving a last message for her dad.
Yes, a badass last message for her dad. All right, let's move on to another character. My favorite character and my favorite character and his friends. Lito.
Lito!
So, I'm so happy to hear you say his name like that, because I remember our first episode, It was kind of like, he's fine. He's okay. And I'm like, no, guys, he's great, though.
Actual babe.
I just felt so vindicated because the minute in the first episode, he was like, my heart belongs to someone else. I'm like, it's a dude. It's totally a dude. And the next episode, it was a dude. And I'm like, it's a dude. I knew it.
And what a dude.
And what a dude.
Yes, let's talk about Hernando a little bit because we get much more of him in this episode. He's not just laying naked in bed the whole time.
We do like that as well.
We do like that. So he and Leto have a really great and interesting relationship. In this episode, obviously, we see what sort of chemistry they have, but we also see them kind of talking through the issues that they face on a day-to-day basis. Such as Leto, I think it was in the last episode, Leto not being able to really take him to movie premieres and them being sort of, Leto being sort of nervous about public perception. But then we get Daniela in the mix, or as Danny, as she becomes to be known. And she kind of jumps in without really asking to be their sort of beard, which is like the person to like deflect, I guess, any sort of notions of perhaps Leto being gay, being in a relationship with his boyfriend. How do we feel about Danny after seeing this episode? Because in the first episode, she was pretty pushy.
Well, I mean, last week we kind of debriefed on Danny. And
okay, sorry.
I'll just catch you up real quick.
Please.
So Danny is fantastic. Well, we loved everything about her. I think this episode, she kind of rubbed me the wrong way at the end of the last episode because I think she wasn't listening to Leto. Mm-hmm. I feel like she was very much like, oh good, this is about me. And this episode, we still kind of get that a little bit as well. However, I think that she's a little more open to hearing about Leto, like we're getting there. It's a very slow process with her because yes, she is kind of like, oh, this is about me. How did you pick me? How did you do this? How did you do that? And that kind of stuff kind of just bugs me a little bit. But I think that we're getting to the point where she's just like, she wants to hear about Hernando and how their relationship works and how important it is to Leto and why they need to keep it a secret. And we're making great strides towards her understanding. And so she's bugging me less and less as the show goes on, which is good.
She was being a bit of a Kennedy.
Yes. Oh, great descriptor.
I was going to say she was like Tumblr because she was like, I love gay porn. I'm yes, like, you're Tumblr.
Yes. She was Tumblr. As soon as that is also a great descriptor because as soon as like the scene would have happened in, I guess when Sense8 started, I'm just seeing like GIFs of Leto and Nendo being like reblogged hundreds of thousands of times.
Yep.
Yeah. Nope. That is
if Kennedy had a Tumblr.
Yep. So we're learning to love and accept Danny with all of her eccentric opinions and you just gotta reel her in a bit, which is fun.
Yeah, she seems like she's gonna be a handful considering it sounds like she belongs to a family of organized crime.
Yeah, she's got a lot of baggage. Baggage that wants to harm Leto and pay for lunch. So
because everyone's got to pay at some point.
Exactly. Her ex, Joaquin, is obviously
douchebag.
Douchebag. I was going to go with psycho, but douchebag works as well.
All of the above.
All of the above. Yeah, he threatens Leto at lunch, and he is very threatening in his non-threatening manner. So we kind of get to see who he is as a person in that way. Like he's not quick to rage. He's like one of those, he's an abuser basically. Mm-hmm. Like you can tell just how he holds himself. And I mean, if I were Danny, I would try to get away from him as well.
Probably don't want to piss him off by sleeping with his best friend, though. That seemed like a bad call.
Yeah. Yeah. Danny, she's wonderful. She does make mistakes, and she does own up to her mistakes.
Impulsive, but, I think.
Impulsive, and I don't think she can read a room very well, which, unless there's a photographer around, then she knows what to do. But I think, especially because, like, you know, we see her coming down from this conflict with Joaquin by sleeping with his friend, and she's just like, oh, organized crime, everything's fine. And Leto's like, wait, what? And then, you know, she walks in on them and just, like, jumps into bed, and they're like, okay, but, you know. So act first, think later, I think, is Danny's best descriptor right now.
How do you feel about her sort of volunteering to be a beard, knowing how it's going to be helping her? Does it still feel okay? Is it, I don't know. I guess kind of what I'm asking is, it doesn't seem self-serving at all, or does it?
Oh, it's totally self-serving.
Yeah, absolutely.
About 1,000% self-serving.
Okay.
It's what any, like, she's the typical Tumblr fangirl who would shove herself in that position. Like, she's Tumblr.
Yeah, and I think it's while still being self-serving to Danny, but she is kind of taking agency in that self-service, which is good. I think it's better that she is aware of what she's doing instead of, like, throwing herself at Leto for, you know, well, I guess she's still kind of doing the same exact thing. But knowing that there's going to be nothing given to her in return is a little bit nicer than it was before. However, yeah, definitely still self-serving.
I mean, she is getting something in return. She's getting cover from Joaquin. And she's getting a lot more press by dating Leto. Like, she's getting a lot out of this. She's just not getting sex out of it.
Yeah, that's what I meant. More, less of a, she's not looking to get physical pleasure.
I didn't, like, the minute she turns it off in the last episode when she realizes that Leto is gay, like, it felt like it was never really about sex. Like, the sex was a way to
get in the apartment and not have to go back.
And get into, like, his life more permanently, or at least, but it never, like, the fact that she's like, oh, new way to do this, it just doesn't seem like the sex was important. It was, how can I situate myself alongside Leto for a long-term situation? And she just kind of immediately goes, okay, change of plans, let's do this.
And I think almost like relief in a way, I guess.
Yeah, I would agree with that. And which again tells me it was never about the sex.
Well, okay. So speaking of that, Mai, you put a point in here, and I did see this point when I was doing a little bit of research for this episode. Did you want to talk about their conversation after Leto and Hernando are like, are you going to talk to her? Let's talk to her. Like, we need to talk about last night.
Oh, yeah.
Mai, do you want to take this?
I didn't really have anything because it's the first time I really noticed it. That something may have happened after the champagne was served.
Yeah, I caught that, too. And they were both like, blah, 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 blah. Like, I don't know. It was...
It's like, wait, what? Did she legit get in the middle of something here?
Yeah, I mean, it's a valid question.
I mean, they seemed so uninterested in her. I have a hard time buying.
Maybe, like, she just watched, I don't know.
The fact they're like, honey, the problem is you don't have a dick. Like, they're not interested.
Yeah, I thought that initially my mind went there, but then... as they were talking in the morning, I thought it was more of like, let's talk about the fact that you got into bed with us and just decided everything was cool and chill. And
yeah, maybe they cuddled and napped. I don't know.
Yeah, even though we need to, like, sort through more specifics about this. I think it might have been a little more awkward between Leto and Hernando when they were watching their soaps in the morning, and he was doing all of the lines. Oh God, that was so wonderful.
Adorable, right? It's just, and it's interesting because I know there are some fans who kind of have that conversation as to what happened.
Yeah.
Obviously, with more information kind of moving forward, they kind of look back and they're like, oh, what is going on? So that's all I want to say about that. Any last thoughts about Leto and Hernando, the beautiful men that they are?
Not until my favorite scene.
Okay. Well, then we will leave them and we'll move on to Riley. So Riley had, I mean, in comparison to pretty much everyone else, she had a pretty low-key sort of storyline going on now. She's kind of going back to London, I believe, or going to a different part of London, trying to stay away from the people who are after her. And she gives away the money that was unbeknownst, like, handed to her, as well as throwing away all of the drugs. And then goes to these two people and asks them for help. What did you feel about Riley's storyline here, like her giving away that money? Is she making the right decisions by, like, going to ask these random strangers? Or she knows him, but, like, he seems less like a friend and more just like an acquaintance. I don't know. I particularly didn't like this episode for Riley, and I was just wondering how everyone else felt.
Wow. Okay. Riley was my favorite part of this whole episode.
Okay. Please. So,
interesting.
Please.
Let's dig into it.
Yes.
So I think Riley is slowly becoming my favorite character, mainly because I have the most questions about her. And this episode, I think she's still, like, she's on the run. She's giving up this money. She's getting rid of the drugs. She's in a place where she's not home. And the only contact she has left is this guy, Shugs, who's, like, greatest name ever. But he, you know, I think he represents this non-threatening sort of blank slate. He's that guy who, like, they would hang out time to time and, you know, like, just zero judgment. Well, except for Bambi, but, you know, she's Australian or something, so whatever.
And her name's Bambi.
Yeah. I don't know. She, like, Riley's story here, like, we got to hear that she's from Iceland and just the complex relationship she has with home and being away and not having a place and getting wrapped up in this world that, I guess, for at least to me, doesn't seem intentional. Like, one, it's sort of a one thing led to another and now I'm stuck and can't get out sort of situation. And I just really enjoyed the bouncing of their day. I think that, you know, going from her, what we saw in the last episode, her walking through, like, London and kind of being connected to Nomi in that scene, and then going into the underground and just hearing this piece of music that brought her back to home, and then, which we found out later, of course, but getting rid of the money, getting rid of the drugs, and sort of finding the only person she kind of can turn to for some sort of help, whether that's just crashing in his flat and then having a drink with them, and just being able to sort of talk a little bit. I think that her storyline was just so, I don't even know why I'm connected to it. I just really want to know more about her. It could be just, I find the actress very captivating, and the way she was telling her story, she was still opening up but holding back a lot. And I think I want to know what she was holding back. Plus, in the last episode, I pointed to the fact that I feel like she's the most connected. We've seen her connected to the most amount of people. And I just want to know why and more about her.
I find it interesting that she seems to be more connected with these people, yet the people in her life, like, none of them seem trustworthy. Like, I just spent the whole time with her on edge because these new people, I didn't give an ounce of trust to either. And especially when you get that connection to Leto and he's mm-hmm. like, I'm mm-hmm. about to be betrayed. And I'm like, okay, that's not good. So mm-hmm. It seems like in her real life, she doesn't have any, like, the people around her are not quality people. So I find that interesting that she seems so connected to the other sensates, yet has such bad connections in the quote unquote real world.
Well, maybe that's why she's so connected to them, like unintentionally connected to them. Like she's not, well, because, you know, we have Will, who she sees at the end of the episode. They actually like talk, it looks like. So, you know, I think that she's so lost that even like, I mean, none of them know that they're connected to each other. I don't think, at least on some level, I'm sure that they do. But right now, obviously, Will is looking for more answers. As we see him running out of the hospital being like, I need answers. I need to talk to him. But yeah, I don't know what it is about her story. I'm just so intrigued by it. And I think that her conversation with Shugs about, you know, especially when he's explaining his tattoos and Bambi points out like, well, when have you tried to take your life? And just those momentary checkouts, as they call them, from dealing with the real world. I just thought that whole conversation was really written in an interesting way. And I don't know, I just felt sorry for her that she kind of felt that this was the only person she could turn to. She had literally no one else.
Yeah, that's a sad statement. Mm-hmm. Definitely worth pity, I think.
Yeah, I think she gets a lot of really great, like you were saying, really great character moments in this episode, but kind of moments that don't explain anything but set the stage for more information to be revealed. It's really hard to talk around this. Mm-hmm. So I'm going to say hashtag no comment. Mai, did you have any other thoughts about Riley here?
Not really. I mainly just hate her name because it's not that Scandinavian if she's supposed to be from Iceland. Haven't heard of many people, well, women named Riley. Maybe she chose it, who knows. I also wanted to mention that Chug is played by Frank Delane, aka Tom Riddle.
I didn't pick up on that. It says in here in Harry Potter and the Half-Blood Prince, right?
Yeah.
Interesting.
Well, he grew
looks
up
different.
Very yes.
He had a rough adolescence.
Yeah, well, who wouldn't, being Tom Riddle?
Yeah. Wasn't the easiest route.
Horcruxes are, you know, they take a lot out of you.
Don't do horcruxes.
Very funny.
I try.
All right, let's move on from Riley because I don't want to say anything more about her.
Yeah, it's hard to discuss.
Yes, yes. But let's talk about Nomi because I think out of all of the storylines, perhaps other than Cappius, like Nomi's storyline is definitely the most gripping because we see her, she's still in the hospital and things just keep getting worse for her. She's trapped and she's forced to stay. I know last week we saw a lot of like the lead up into it about how like her girlfriend was not allowed in the hospital and her family, except for her sister, was being kind of terrible. And so how did you feel about Nomi still in this situation? Where was anyone else on edge like every time she was on screen? Or was it
just Mm-hmm. And that's saying something since we know what's going to happen.
I know. I think it's just a testament to the way that they're doing this with Nomi and kind of like making this mystery play out. Like, does anybody have an idea about what the end goal of lobotomizing Nomi is or like what's going on with Dr. Metzger? Because it seems like a very strange, albeit not unrealistic, hospital situation.
So I'm running with the assumption that Dr. Metzger works with the Whispers guy because of all the brain operation stuff going on, and they clearly know about the sensates, and whatever connects them has stuff to do with the brain, and they're either wanting to like destroy it or like make it not workable or harness it for themselves or something.
Yeah, and I think because of how Nomi's mother treats her and, you know, basically does not care at all, I think that she was more than willing to give Nomi over to science. Also, I keep thinking of Mai's point from last week's episode where Metzger means butcher. So Dr. Butcher just, it still rubs me the wrong way.
Sorry.
That's where that title came from. Interesting.
Yes. So Metzger means butcher. And so Dr. Butcher just wants to do what he wants to do, which is chop up someone's brain. And we kind of see that, you know, it ties back to what we were talking about at the top of the episode where, you know, is Will having a dream? Is he seeing something someone else wants him to see, or is it connected to Nomi's story? So I think, again, the answer is all three. He clearly is seeing something that's happening that we're seeing being thwarted here. So, like, you know, obviously it doesn't happen in this episode because I'm assuming I'm gonna need to set off the fire alarm. You know,
I mean, she said she'd burn the place down before they could form a hair on Nomi's head.
So I think, you know, we're seeing that's imagery from the first part of the episode come back here. Something that happened before is happening again.
Have a question for the newbies. Do you think that it's significant that the nurse mentioned seeing some odd brain activity on Will's?
Oh, yeah. And luckily no one from the Whisper or Whisper guy works at that hospital because he'd be on that table too. Mm-hmm. I did catch that. And obviously that language to Will would mean nothing because he was just in a car crash and they told him he might have a concussion. But yeah, the brain activity, I definitely caught that and thought it was probably going to be the same exact thing as what they see on Nomi's scan or anyone else's scan for that matter. And the girl warning him, you know, don't look in their eyes. You know, he could end up on that table should those results get out.
No comment. a lot of Nomi's storyline in this episode was just her being stressed out and for good reason.
Oh, that at the end when she realizes that Neat's got her out. Oh.
Mama Nita. This is wonderful.
Best of girlfriends, best of women.
Yes. And it only gets better. Hashtag no comment. When I don't know what to say, I just start spewing words and sometimes it might be bad. So hashtag no comment. Any other thoughts about Nomi before we move on to our last sensate that we saw in this episode?
Love me some Amanita.
All right. Me too.
I do have one because you said we're moving on to our last sense. I don't even know what to call them. Last person. Going back to Will, because I don't think we got, like, you know, he gets out of the hospital and he goes back to work and he's clearly like concussed and can't walk. But he wants to talk to Jonas. And I thought that was really interesting because I think he was starting to get answers. And at the end of the last episode, you know, it was very stressful. He's like, is he driving? Is he not driving? Who's driving now? And, you know, he's sort of now set on this edge of knowing but not knowing anything, and you know, is he going crazy? And I think that's a interesting place to leave Will for the moment, because, you know, is this all in his head? He really did catch the guy, and it's a physical being and it's a person, and if he could just talk to him. You know, we see Jonas kind of bouncing around in all of these other people's lives, and he's caught on camera by Nomi, and he's physically now captured by the FBI. So, like, does that now, this is more of a rhetorical question, that's something I was thinking about. Does this now limit his ability to get through to these eight people and sort of give them, in a sense, the keys to the kingdom? Like, what is going on with them? At first, I thought he was not going to help them, and his presence was, like, you know, an omen and a bad thing. But I got a different sense of that by the end of last episode after talking through some things with Mitch and Mai and Kristen. You know, like, maybe he is there to guide them, but what does that mean now that he's locked up and Will can't have access to him? Or is there another way for him to access them? Because I feel like he wasn't just bouncing around between San Francisco and Chicago physically, like, you know, getting on an airplane, getting off an airplane. Right. Especially so because he's probably on a no-fly list, because he's wanted by the FBI. But yeah, I'm interested, just a general comment, interested to see where his storyline goes, because I was starting to really have a lot of questions and hopefully get some answers about him. So
I find him so frustrating because he's acting like he wants to be so helpful and then he says nothing.
Yep. Yeah. It's sort of like
Jonas.
I'll lead you to the water, but I'm not going to show you how to drink it, sort of thing.
Or I'm going to tell you there's water in that direction.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
Or liquid. Yeah, might not even be water.
Yeah, it's just liquid. I can't say anything.
I wasn't looking for anything.
Yeah, but I think that's a really great thing to keep an eye out for. And I think that's a really great question that you brought up.
You have good thoughts.
You do. Both of you have good thoughts.
Good brain activity.
Yeah. I like that.
Right. I do too. And I don't have a transition right now because I apparently have bad brain activity, but let's go to Kala.
Someone else who has strange brain activity, probably.
Probably. I mean, we don't know, but probably. So we don't see a lot of Kala, but we do see more of her hesitation about getting married, mostly through this meeting that she was having at work surrounding the topic of, like, counterfeit drugs being sold. Which kind of harkens back to, maybe not counterfeit, but, like, it kind of nods back to what Cafius is going through.
Yeah.
Is it this drug dealer to get these drugs for his mother? I really didn't like this scene with Kala. It kind of made me uncomfortable. Like, her soon-to-be husband, who is her superior, is, like, texting her in the middle of a meeting that seems really important.
Like, the meeting seems important, but also, like, Kala just rolled in whenever she wanted to. Like,
fair.
I didn't
and
get
just
a
chatting.
Yeah, I didn't get a sense of urgency, and, you know, I feel like this guy was like, okay, here's my presentation, listen if you want. I wasn't uncomfortable with it. I actually thought it was cute. So
hey,
yeah, I don't know, I just really like Rajan a lot.
Okay.
I'm just waiting for him to, like, turn out awful, because, like, why else doesn't she like him?
Yeah.
Because he seems so wonderful otherwise, so I'm just...
Or find out something else about her. Like, I'm just waiting for the ball to drop. Like,
yeah.
Like, what is going on here?
I mean, he's, like, pulling out Bollywood dance numbers. What is wrong with him? Like, he's perfect. So I'm waiting for the shoe to drop.
Oh, he practiced that.
Because sometimes you just don't feel that way.
And that's fine. I just want to explore it more, I think.
But he is hella cute, though.
Oh,
mm-hmm. And I think it's interesting, in the conversation that she has with her coworker at the table, they're talking about, like, being lobotomized, right?
Mm-hmm.
In the conversation here.
Yeah.
So that was, again, kind of connecting to all the other characters. And I believe that colleague was like, I wouldn't mind being lobotomized or something.
Yeah.
I was like, oh, subtle. Good.
Euphemism.
Just a very weird conversation that happens there. That is the only scene that we really get with Kala, isn't it?
Yeah, that's it.
Yeah.
Okay. Did you want I know I was looking over the show notes for the previous episode, and I promise I'm going to listen to it after I'm done here. But I know last week we were kind of talking about like the inequality of like the storylines in terms of how much time we spend with everyone. Were you okay with the balance in this episode at all? Or did you want like more from Kala, less from someone else?
I personally was fine with it, mainly because I think, you know, it's sort of like, oh, we're not getting this person here. We'll get them next week. Yeah. Cause we talked about Sun a little bit last week and how, you know, she wasn't in it. We saw her, a glimpse of her. Mm-hmm. So I think that kind of inequality lends itself to the streaming nature of this show. Because if you're sitting down to watch a Netflix show, you're likely going to watch more than one episode at a time. Likely, that's not always the case.
Yes. But,
you know, if you watch 2 to 3 episodes back to back, the stories will definitely seem more balanced because of the nature of watching one episode after another. You're not really, oh, that person wasn't there for 40 minutes. Well, I got 20 minutes of them here. Mm-hmm. So to me, it didn't feel unbalanced, mainly because I feel like we got everyone else's stories that we didn't get last week, because we got a lot of Kala. I mean, it was a lot was dancing, but still.
Delightful dancing.
And like her outfit, I just want to say,
Oh, so pretty.
Oh my God. I wanted it.
I was obsessed with that dress.
Yes. Oh, so beautiful. I'm sorry. I just had to say that.
But in regards to balancing the stories, I think it's actually a little bit better that they're not all in at the same time. However, there was a note in our show notes for this week saying that, don't worry, they're all going to be in the episodes going forward. So I was like, oh, all right, well, there goes my appreciation of the fact that they're not all in the episodes all the time. But I'm hoping that if they are going to be all in the episodes going forward, that it's because we're getting more of the connection and not so much independent storylines with a little bit of connection.
You never know. It might be like Sun sitting on the bench for half a second.
Yeah.
Right.
So, yeah. Like, remember this person exists.
Like, I mean, I'm assuming that that's correct, but if someone went out of their way to write that, then I think that it might have been a little slip. But that's okay.
Yeah, I mean, they do a really good job at that sort of balance. And I don't think it's a spoiler to say, like you were saying, it gets better as they kind of explore the connection that's going on, because you might see them in different contexts, not necessarily in their own story, but in different contexts. Mm.
So you didn't miss Wolfgang at all?
Oh, no, I missed him so much.
Yeah.
I was kind
really?
Of upset.
I don't understand.
He's so
Why?
Great.
Because he's my boy.
He has no personality. Yet.
Exactly.
He has so much personality.
Oh my gosh.
Like when he was at the bar with his friend after the heist and he was just like so happy. I was like, oh, he's so cute. Like, I don't know. I think it's
like talent shows.
Yeah. He's just like this guy, you know, I don't know what it is. I really like Wolfgang, and I did notice that he wasn't here. And when Kala's scene came on, I was like, oh good. Maybe we'll see Wolfgang. And then it didn't happen.
Okay.
But I mean, we talked about this at length last week. Me and Maya.
Yeah, we did.
We really liked, you know, him and Kala's really like connection, like especially when she's like, oh, is it hot in here? And then he wants Indian food. I just thought that was great.
Greatest box man in the world.
More disagreement, Brittany, because he's my least favorite so far.
Classic.
All right. Mai, you had in here that you wanted to mention one more thing before we move on to our favorite scenes and favorite lines.
Yeah, I want to talk about parallels and similarities between our sensates in this episode. And I'm not just talking like the obvious ones, like Cappius having a fight and Sun having a fight and the safe scene and like Leto smoking and then panning over to Sun smoking, but also like the bigger things. Danny's needing a place to stay because of a dangerous man, and Riley needs a new place to stay because of a dangerous man.
Mm-hmm.
And Riley's wrists, Leto having a knife to his throat sort of thing. The biggest two, Kala's meeting involves making of the drugs, and then Kaff's meeting is buying of the drugs. My personal kind of favorite, if that's the right word, is Nomi's hands are bound, and then we see Sun having her hands taped. So one is helpless and one is getting ready to fight. And I just, these transitions are giving me life. And I just,
yeah, so like one's agency is taken away, whereas another is helping her get ready to rebel.
Basically, I just wanted to know if you had some thoughts on this kind of stuff.
Well, like I said, I think one of the more interesting things about Sun and Will's connection when they're looking through those files is the fact that like they're both dealing with these father figures who won't give them the time of day with the thing they need help with. So like there's that, and then all of the ones you mentioned as well. I just think that, like we were talking about last week, that these context clues are everywhere, and it kind of goes along with questioning of the science. Like, if you're asking these questions and looking for these little things, I think it makes the show more challenging, but also more fun to watch. So I'm really enjoying picking up on all those types of parallels because, as you pointed out, they're kind of endless and they can be connected to any one of them, not just the people who are directly like showing up in the scene that they are helping out with. So like, it's not just Sun and Will and Cassius in that fight scene, but there are like, you know, you can take it further back and connect Will and Sun and Nomi and Nomi and Will, and you know, they're, the lines are endless. And then you throw Leto in there with some humor and it's great.
I definitely am expecting Kala and Cassius's story to intersect with mm-hmm. the drugs for sure.
Yeah, I just started making this list because when I saw Sun smoking right after Leto smoking, I started wondering if one of them was doing it because of the other.
Oh, like the craving could have transferred over?
Yeah, because Sun having that habit while also being a fighter doesn't... It's not the most useful habit to have if you're going to go out and work out.
I was also thinking, actually, during that scene, I was like, I don't even remember the last time I saw smoking on a TV show I watched.
Fair.
I was just like, stop smoking. You're going to get cancer.
Yeah. Stop it, Leto. I love you too much.
So if one gets lung cancer, can another one have lung cancer show up in their scans?
Weird possibly. Lung activity.
I don't know.
Yeah, episode title.
No, I think these are really interesting pieces to note moving forward. And I think it's just a testament to how much care is kind of put into the show, because they're not only thinking of connecting them narratively in terms of like the drugs, but also connecting everything visually.
Yeah, the visuals of Nomi waking up and seeing the restraints
mm-hmm.
and then like panning over to see Sun getting her badass on.
There's just a lot of thought that goes into everything. And I that's one of the things I definitely really appreciate about this show. So thank you for bringing those up. And if you notice any more interesting ones moving forward, please keep doing that. All right. So let's move into our favorite scenes and favorite lines to talk about more things that we loved or enjoyed, because I'm not sure what your levels are as of yet. And I just want to go first really quickly. My favorite scene was Leto, Arnando, and Danny having the talk about her being a beard, because I really, really enjoy their character dynamics. Even from the very beginning, they really stick out to me and they're just so endearing. So that was my favorite scene.
I just got a comment on yours, because that sound that Arnando makes when Leto downs the alcohol is just like, oh, here we go.
Oh, that's horrible.
Yeah, but mine is Fernando mouthing the lines to the soap when they're in the kitchen, and then Leto starts throwing food at him because they are adorable.
They are. It shows them as like a real romantic couple and not just kind of fetishizing their relationship.
And then they start making out, so yeah.
I mean, there is that. That's normal, though. But yeah, I agree. It's adorable. Caitlin, your favorite scene?
Mine was when Cappius decides he's going to go after the gang and he tells everyone to get off the bus, and then that one lady just stays. She's like, I want my ring back.
Yeah.
Like, I was so into her being like, I want my ring. Let's go. She was great.
She was awesome. And Brittany, your favorite scene?
My favorite scene was the least popular of the episode, but it was Riley talking about Iceland and, like, you know, just hearing from Shug about, like, his tattoos and what they mean, and them just having, like, a real moment before what was foreshadowed as there being a possible betrayal coming up.
All right. Favorite lines. Mine was from Danny. We kind of mentioned it previously, but it always makes me laugh. It's when she is having the talk with Leto and Hernando, and she says, oh my God, so much fun. Oh, I'm so sorry if I got carried away last night. It's just that I love gay porn.
She's Tumblr.
So that's me. That's my favorite line. My, what is yours?
I'm getting married, not lobotomized.
Hey. So interesting. Caitlin, your favorite line?
Mine was the conversation between Jella and Cappius over the meat. And Jella says, I'll tell you something my father told me. As long as you're determined and you work hard, you can be anything you want to be. And if there's one person who can be a zebra in this world, it's you, my friend. And then I love when he's like, well, what did you tell your father you wanted to be? And he was like, the son of a rich man. They're cute.
They're adorable. I hate calling them the sidekicks, but I love the secondary characters for all of the Sense8s.
And the friends.
The friends, yeah. It gets better and better. But keeping with Cappius and his storyline, Brittany, what was your favorite line?
He is Van Damme. So it was just like, and it was like the close of the episode. So it was like just so perfect.
Maybe Van Damme watch over you.
Like, he's gonna get such a good reputation.
That woman is all about it. All right, so those were our favorite scenes and favorite lines. If you want to get in contact with us and let us know what your favorite scenes and favorite lines were, or if you just want to talk to us about whatever you want to talk to us about the episodes that we have just watched, you can get in contact with us. Our email is rewatchable.podcast@gmail.com. You can tweet at us at re_watchable. You can contact us through our Tumblr, which is rewatchablepodcast.tumblr.com. We will most likely have some Danny stuff on there moving forward. I wish we had Danny to man our Tumblr, but Mai is a pretty good person to do it. You can also leave us a review, please, please, please. If you rate us 5 stars on iTunes, then Karen will use her secret Van Damme powers to topple the bad guys for you. And I mean, who wouldn't want Karen to do that? She's watched a ton of, like, Mortal Kombat, and I'm sure she's watched Van Damme movies, so she has.
And she likes them.
And she, yes.
Surprise.
That is the important part. Yeah, but if you do leave us reviews, we would be forever grateful. They help us find more people like you who love Sense8 or are interested in Sense8 or looking for a good show to watch. And we just want to have a huge, big, happy family. So leaving us reviews can help us do that. And speaking of our big, huge, happy family, we do have some listener feedback for this week. Let's see. Caitlin, would you like to take this first tweet, please?
Sure. Nerdy Geek at NerdyGeek77 says, I'm so enjoying this run of the podcast. It's so great. I'm really excited for this ep for a lot of reasons.
So glad to hear it. I'm enjoying this run. I can't really speak for anyone else, but I'm enjoying this run so far.
And now you can tell us all the reasons.
Yes.
Yes. Tell us the reasons why you loved 103.
Mm-hmm. I want to know the reasons for this next tweet too. Brittany, will you take this one?
Sure. So Joe Ludwigson at Total Average Joe says, binge watching the disastrous life of Saki K with a couple of friends, at least the first season. Other than that, I am eagerly anticipating the podcast discussing episode 3 of Sense 8. I believe Mitch replied to Joe to discuss the show, so I've never heard of it, but Mitch neither. And he totally understands. So there's some understanding out there. Rewatchable will connect you with people who understand your other binge watching needs.
And I want to understand, and I want to know if we discussed all of the things that you were looking forward to for this episode. I'm really hoping so. All right, we have one more tweet. It was actually a string of tweets, if I believe I'm remembering properly. Mai, would you be able to take this one?
This is the queer place at Nurse Brack. It's always interesting to me to hear people's thoughts on the whole Nomi hospital situation. The second time I watched the first season, I watched it with my mother, and I remember being surprised at how genuinely distressed she was over the whole thing. Whereas when I watched it, I was far more accepting of it as a thing that could easily happen. I just thought, sci-fi weirdness aside, this is a pretty accurate representation of what happens to a lot of queer people in the health system when their families take over. My mother was very incredulous, and I had to explain to her that sort of thing happens all the time, as for how easily they were able to have her committed, ?
Oh, I think that the end of this was like, you'll have to wait and see. Like, there are more answers coming.
Okay, yeah.
It might have gotten cut off.
Yeah, I can't comment on this since it's America.
But I do think, and I can't really truly comment on it because I've never been in this situation. But from what I've heard or the story.
But I wasn't surprised.
Yes, yeah, exactly. So I think that's really interesting, the different ways that you and your mom were watching this. All right, so that's the end of our listener feedback. Again, please get in contact with us. We would love to hear what you thought about this episode of Sense8, this episode of our podcast, or just anything that's in your brain about Sense8. Remember, no spoilers, please. We have newbies all over the place. We don't want to spoil Brittany, who's manning our Twitter account. That would be really, really bad. So please do get in contact with us, but please remember that. And before we go, it's time for our last segment, Brittany's Brainstorms and Caitlin's Conjectures. They'll be doing this for Sense8 Season 1, Episode 4, What's Going On? Take it away, ladies.
I mean, that's what I've been saying for the last 3 hours.
I was going to say, hopefully, I mean, I don't know if there's a question mark at the end of that what's going on, or it's a declarative statement like, here's what's going on. I might prefer the latter, but...
Everyone keeps saying episode 4 is when everything starts to make sense. So.
Oh, really? I've never heard that. Well, I also haven't heard anything about this show, so...
Well, that's what I've been hearing from our super fans, so...
Oh. Guys, stop eating breadcrumbs.
Guys.
No.
Guys, there's supposed to be a question mark at the end of that title.
Ah, well, we didn't make the doc, okay. So... well, what's going on? ? Well, maybe this is a line taken directly from the episode and like one of the sense people talk to another sense person and they're like, hey, what's going on? Like in a mirror or something. And they're like, whoa, what is going on? So there's like a lot of that phrase thrown around. Ideally I'd like to see Wolfgang, and figure out what's going on with him. And more of Kala and maybe a jailbreak for Nomi. That would be great. But honestly, I cannot predict what's going to happen in this show. It's going to be a very bad Brittany's Brainstorms 6 months because literally anything could happen.
I mean, what's going on is just like the theme of these first 3 episodes.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. What is going on?
And maybe episode 4 will be like, okay, you suffered long enough. Here's what's going on.
Don't give you answers now, you're going to drop the show.
It's literally just 44 minutes of Jonas talking directly to the camera.
Like The Office.
With like a PowerPoint.
Since the dawn of time.
in a world where people are connected.
Dun, dun. A
sensei group is born.
Making me also wish that we had like the Arrested Development Ron Howard voiceover. Like, what's going on? They did not know what was going on. All right, so we will leave it there, and we will go and watch this next episode of Sense8. I hope everyone enjoys it. I know that I certainly will. And until next week, I'm Danielle.
I'm Mai.
I'm Caitlin.
And I'm Brittany.
See you later.
Bye.
Bye.